ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम दी भगवद्गीता चैप्टर 15। द चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द योगा ऑफ द सुप्रीम पर्सन। टेक्स्ट नंबर 11। यतन्तो योगिनश्चैनम् पश्यन्त्यात्मन्यवस्थितम्। यतन्तोऽप्यकृतात्मानो नैनं पश्यन्त्यचेतसा। यतन् ट्रांसलेशन पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन: The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. But those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try. Purport: There are many transcendentalists on the path of spiritual self-realization. But one who is not situated in self-realization cannot see how things are changing in the body of the living entity. The word yogina is significant in this connection. In the present day, there are many so-called yogis and there are many so-called associations of yogis. But they are actually blind in the matter of self-realization. They are simply addicted to some sort of gymnastic exercise and are satisfied if the body is well built and healthy. They have no other information. They are called yatanto api akritatmano. Even though they are endeavoring in a so-called yoga system, they are not self-realized. Such people cannot understand the process of the transmigration of the soul. Only those who are actually in the yoga system and have realized the self, the world, and the Supreme Lord. In other words, the bhakti yogis, those engaged in pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness, can understand how things are taking place. Om Agyanatim. So Hare Krishna, we will continue with the discussion on this 15th chapter, and currently we are on the 11th verse. This verse is Krishna is concluding one section that he discussed in the previous couple of verses. In 15.8 till this verse, 8 to 12 is a section that Krishna is trying to highlight a specific point. So now he is concluding. He says, the endeavoring transcendentalists, although they may try hard, they cannot see the actual things in perspective. So just to get a rough idea, let us see the previous three verses of translations, and then we can understand why this verse is being told here. So in 15.8 to 10, Krishna is talking about how a living entity is entangled in this world and how he is not able to discriminate the right and the wrong. He is not able to understand his actual position about how he is caught up in this material world. So these translations give a nice understanding of the living entity's struggling situation. So let us see the translations. He says, the living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries the aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So he's comparing a living entity's movement within the universe to the carrying of aroma by the wind. So just as a wind blows over different places, it takes on the aroma or the fragrance of that particular place, and then it transports to some other place. So similarly, a living entity carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another. So currently he is in a certain type of body, he has a certain kind of conception, he has a certain kind of understanding of life and understanding of life. And then he carries those impressions and according to his desires and activities goes on to a different kind of body. And that body is, in that body again, he creates a certain kind of impressions and conceptions which is again carried forward to a different kind of body. In this way, in contact with the different modes of material nature, the living entity is constantly transmigrating from one body to another, from one species of life to another species. And there is no end to the struggle for existence. According to his desires and the impressions that he has, he is awarded a certain kind of body. The ability to hear, the sense of ear, sense of sight, sense of smell, sense of touch. All these senses are awarded and their respective abilities are awarded to him according to his desires and impressions that he has developed. And all these senses are grouped around the mind, because the mind is the chief sense organ. It is called, sometimes it is called as a sixth sense, around which all the five senses are centered on. So some animals have better sense of smell, some have better sense of touch, some have better sense of sight. So all these different capacities of different senses are awarded to him according to his desires and impressions that he has cultivated in his previous life. So even in this life, even among human beings, we see different abilities and capacities of different kind of individuals. Although we all claim to be belonging to one species, we still see so many different gradations and different levels of capacities among so many different individuals. Right? Some people have better ability to memorize things. Some people have a better ability to do some other things. Some people can run fast. Some people can sing nicely, speak nicely, or do things efficiently. So everyone has different capacities depending on the ability of his senses. And these things are awarded to him according to his impressions that he has created in his previous life. So one who is in knowledge, he is able to see that whatever a living entity does is based on his activities, his activities in the previous life. Whatever his situation is right now is all a reaction to his past activities. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. And in this verse he's saying, the endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. So one needs, one who is situated in self-realization, one who understands what is the self, how he is different from matter, he is supposed to be situated in self-realization. And one who is properly situated in self-realization, he is able to see things in the right perspective. So what are the things that we are not able to see clearly? What is Krishna trying to emphasize here? That one who cannot see things clearly is foolish. What are the things that we are not able to see things clearly? We may say, I have good eyesight, or I have good vision, so I can see things clearly, I can read nicely, I can see things that are at a far distance. I have no problem. I have no eye diseases, I have no cataract. No eye problem, no eye diseases. I can see everything clearly, I can discriminate who is, I can discriminate between who you are, who he is. I can distinguish between man and woman, animal and human being. Everything I can see clearly. I don't need any external device to help see things. So what is Krishna trying to say when he says, the foolish cannot see things clearly? A similar kind of verse also appears in the Bhagavatam. It says, Pashyan api na pashyati. Shukdev Goswami is saying this. That foolish people, they see, yet they don't see. They see things, everything, in right in front of their eyes. But still they are not able to see. So what are those things that Krishna is trying to highlight as being unable to see? One is the most basic thing. How a living entity is transmigrating from one body to another. What is the difference between a living body and a dead body? This was what Prabhupada was constantly bombarding in his lectures and books. How modern scientists are not able to distinguish between a living body and a dead body. Living body is a bunch of chemicals, and a dead body is also the same bunch of chemicals. What makes a living body, and a dead body not a living body? What is that extra thing that makes a living body conscious and responsive to certain kind of emotions? And we know how he proved the existence of the soul, how consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Living body means the presence of the soul, which is different from matter, which is different from the combination of chemicals that make up the body of a living entity. So ability to perceive that extra thing, that the soul which is making the living body conscious, ability to perceive this existence of the soul, the presence of the soul, that is a sign of knowledge. So even though one may see so many people here, right in front of our eyes, but if we consider them just as a combination of matter, and we are not able to see the spirit behind it, the soul behind it, that means we are not seeing. So this is what is seriously lacking in modern educational system. We are taught everything about the body, everything about its functions, but the most critical thing, what makes that living body living or conscious? That is not taught to us in any university. So although we may have all kinds of degrees and certificates that show that we have a good knowledge, if we are lacking in this knowledge, then we are missing the essence. We are seriously lacking in the most important department of knowledge. So that is what is Krishna saying, that one who sees, the foolish does not see, but the person in knowledge who is situated in self-realization, he is able to see. Transmigration of the soul. This is another very important concept that is missing in modern educational system. We have this diorama here that shows the different bodily stages. But it is a very common picture in ISKCON paintings. We have this in SSR, the Science of Self-Realization book. You see that picture? How the body changes from childhood to youth to old age and finally death. We have the same diorama here downstairs. So when someone sees that, generally when people who are not exposed to any kind of spiritual subjects, when they suddenly see that image or that picture, they find it very surprising. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagavan ki, Shri Gopal ji ki, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki. So when we see that picture for the first time, or when anyone sees that picture for the first time, he's amazed. Because we have never thought of picturizing a person's life in such a compact form. We see everything. We see all kinds of people around. Children, youngsters, boys, adults, old men. And we see people who are about to die also. But one single person going through all these stages, and that picture when it comes in front of us, it's a really astonishing thing. It takes us aback. And then we get some glimpse, we become a little philosophical. I am also going through the same stages. I was in childhood at one point of time. Right now I am in an adult body. And after a few years I will be in an old body. And very soon I am going to leave the body. So that picture can immediately give an idea of self-realization to one who is not exposed to any kind of spiritual subject matters throughout his life. So when people see these images, they are sometimes taken aback, amazed, and it immediately enlightens them of what life is, the difference between a living body and a dead body. So otherwise, we have no understanding of birth, old age, disease and death. We are just too absorbed in our current situation. I am a child now, I am a young boy, young man, and I am too busy with my current activities. What I need now, how I can get things now, I am too busy with those. I have no time to think what is going to happen to me in future. We never imagine that I am going to grow old and very soon I am going to die. I have to face death. All these things never come into our mind. Right? But when this picture comes in front of us, we get a glimpse of life after death. And that's how the concept of reincarnation is introduced to us. That after death, there could be a possible future life. And when they see the cycle, old age, death, again, birth, old age, disease, death, birth, old age, disease, death, then we start appreciating, probably there could be life after death. Otherwise, life starts at birth and life ends at death. Nothing after, nothing before. It's totally blind. We remain totally blind to the real understanding of self-realization. And we think this life is all in all. Whatever I can get in this life, I'll try my best. Let me exploit to the maximum extent. Because who knows if there is life after death. So, this, if we are not able to see, that means we are foolish. So when Krishna is saying, people who are foolish, they are not able to see things right in front of their eyes, although they are existing right in front of their eyes, that means they are not situated in self-realization. They have no understanding of the spirit of the science of the self. So if you remain foolish, we see things, we see childhood, old age, disease, death, still we don't see how we ourselves are going to be a part of that cycle. We remain ignorant of the real understanding of life. Perception of the miseries of old age and death. In the 13th chapter, Krishna highlights this point. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukha dosha anudarshanam. One who is able to perceive that birth, death, old age and disease are miseries. They are miseries imposed upon the living entity. If we don't consider them as miseries, that means we are lacking in knowledge. One who is able to see these things as miserable situations, that means he is in knowledge. That means he will try to seek a solution to these problems. If we don't see them as problems, then we will never try to find a solution to it. And he will continue suffering in these threefold miseries. Similarly, with the ability to perceive the natural calamities, the adidaivik, adibhautik and adhyatmik kleshas, one who can see this also as miserable situations, a person is in knowledge. There was this nice series of photographs that was taken immediately after the tsunami attack that happened a few years ago. Three photographs. One, a few minutes before the tsunami hit the Indian Ocean, the South Indian Peninsula. Few minutes before the tsunami, immediately after the tsunami, few minutes after the tsunami, and a week after tsunami. In the first photo, people are enjoying on the beaches. They're relaxing, having fun. And suddenly this wave hits. And everything is washed off. The second picture. The third picture, people are mourning, so many people are dead, and people are running here and there, they don't know what to do. Complete disaster. And in the fourth picture, that is 1 week later, again people are enjoying, again people are having fun on the beaches, roaming here and there. So first and the fourth picture looks identical. No difference. But in the middle, such a big transformation has happened. So many people have lost their lives and so much disaster has happened. Property worth millions of dollars have been destroyed. But one who looks at the first and the fourth picture only, he will never be able to make out that such a drastic change has happened. So that is his illusion. If you are not able to perceive these miseries have undergone, have affected life, then we remain in illusion. So that's modern civilization. We are never exposed to the realities of life. Even when you watch any movie in a cinema theater or anywhere, there is some incidents of calamity, some incidents of death. People are dying. So when one sees such kinds of scenes where there is a disaster or a calamity, one starts introspecting and becomes a little philosophical. He sees the graveyard and the funeral ceremony and he starts thinking deeply about the facts of life. But immediately there is advertisements and commercials. So the industry will never allow you to go philosophical. Their business is to keep you always in illusion. The moment there is a chance of you becoming philosophical, then your industry collapses. Your business will collapse. And that they don't want. So there is constant bombardment of people enjoying in different situations. What are the advertisements? Right? People enjoying so many products, consumerism. And when we see that, we forget all those disasters and calamities that have affected the people. So modern civilization is like that. We are always kept in illusion. That's how it is designed. There is no concept of self-realization. This world is a world of cheaters and cheated. We are not able to perceive this also. The whole industry, consumer industry, a person creates a product, manufactures a product, and there is so much violence and killing involved in everything. He sells it at a certain price. We buy it, and the whole cycle is continuing. Last few Sundays back, Madan Gopal Prabhu was giving this example of cow killing economics. How you purchase a certain kind of product, whose actual cost price is around not more than 5 rupees. Say, for example, toothpaste or a cream, any ointment. The production price is not more than 5 or 10 rupees. But when it comes into the market, they sell it at 40 rupees, 50 rupees, a soap or a toothpaste, these kind of things. And we think just because it has got a good smell and fragrance, we feel that is worth it. 50 rupees is not much. And this profit is, these products are said to have so much animal fat. Soap, for example, is known to contain cow fat taken from the slaughterhouses. The toothpaste is supposed to contain cow bones. These things are used in these products. That's what creates the foam and the lather in these items. So when one uses that, we feel, oh, it's such a nice product. It is giving so much foam and so much freshness. So we are cheated. Those people are cheating and we are getting cheated. And we are not able to perceive this. So in every industry, it happens like this. We are told, this is good medicine. This medicine is good. This can cure so-and-so disease. And we purchase it and it results in a more dangerous side effect. And then we have to spend more medicines. In fact, these medicines are supposed to contain, known to contain cow blood from slaughterhouses. I was recently told that when you purchase a strip of medicine containing 10 tablets or 10 capsules, the initial 2 tablets on each end of the strip, they are just dummy tablets containing some glucose or some sugar. The real medicine is inside. So generally when one purchases a strip of tablets, we don't start in the middle, right? We start from the end. And you take those dummy tablets, it is not going to cure your disease. And then you eat 2 or 3 tablets, and then you come to the real medicine in the middle. And you take that, then your disease is cured. So if the real medicine is there in the end, right from the beginning, and if you take that and cure your disease, how is their business going to run? Is it not? They have to run their business. They want to sell minimum 10 tablets per person, per sick patient. So if the first tablet is going to cure the disease, who is going to purchase the other medicine? And how will their pharmaceutical industry run? So this is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. There are the cheaters, and we are exposing ourselves to get cheated. And we are not even questioning them. We are blindly accepting their advertisements and bombardments. So we are not able to perceive this fact, this reality. So all these things were about the material world, activities in the material world. When we have scriptural knowledge in the form of the Gita and the Bhagavatam, and when those real facts are presented to us, we are not able to accept them. We take imaginary things as real, and when real things are presented before us, we consider them mythological or imaginary or fictitious. So, ability to perceive the reality of scriptural statements, that we are not able to do, that we don't have. Existence of some supreme power, do we have that knowledge to perceive the existence of some superior power that is governing and orchestrating all this universal creation? And finally, Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Many people have this understanding of God and Supreme Controller, but who that original person is, who is that controller? That most people, many religious systems, they don't provide that knowledge. So when Krishna is saying that foolish people are not able to see things clearly, he is indicating at these things that people lacking self-realization are not able to perceive things in the right perspective. And the purport, Prabhupada is highlighting, such people cannot understand the process of transmigration of the soul. Only those who are actually in the yoga system and have realized the self, the world, and the Supreme Lord. In other words, the bhakti yogis, those engaged in pure devotional service, can understand how things are taking place. So there are so many different kinds of yogis. Yoga has become a very common term nowadays. The term yoga has become synonymous with some fitness regime, some fitness program. You do yoga, why? To improve your health. That's the best thing yoga can provide. Yoga means some form of exercise. That's the most common understanding people have currently about yoga. And yoga systems are becoming very popular in the West, right? So many yoga institutions, some kind of awareness is being created in the West about the advantages and the benefits of yoga. So most people understand yoga as some kind of exercise program so that you can remain fit and healthy and enjoy life. But as the Sanskrit term yoga indicates, it is derived from the term yuj, which means connection. Connecting yourself with the Supreme. That's how the word yoga is derived. The purpose of yoga is to connect yourself to that supreme power with love and devotion. So, in the modern society, we see so many different kinds of yogas. When I was young, I also practiced a system of yoga called the Hatha Yoga, meant to improve your health and keep yourself fit. So many asanas and so many yogic postures. Surya Namaskar and so many different kinds of asanas. So many different kinds of bodily gymnastics. You do all those things and you remain fit and healthy. That is Hatha Yoga. There is something called as Ashtanga Yoga. eight staged yoga. It is consisting of eight different processes, eight different steps. Yam, niyam, asan, pranayam, pratyahar, and so on. There are different kinds of rules and regulations. You follow so and so rules, and then you don't do so and so things. And then pranayam, you control your breath, the movement of air. Pratyahar, you withdraw your senses from the external sense objects. So pratyahar itself means there is no engagement of the senses with any sense object. You completely withdraw everything. There is no interaction between any sense and sense object. That is just the fourth stage. And there are four more stages ahead. So only when you clear one stage, then you can go to the next. You can't just directly jump to some different stage. So yam, niyam, you have to follow. Then pranayam, you have to control your breath. And then withdraw. So if anyone is trying to directly jump to any other step, that means he is not going to get the benefit. So this itself proves that these kinds of yogas are totally impractical in today's age. It is not at all going to work. But we have so many yoga societies teaching them. Teaching pranayam without following any yam and niyam. The first two steps. There are yogic institutions teaching pranayam and breath control. And they don't advise their students to follow any rules and regulations. You can eat whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Never bother about that. Just control your breath. Third stage. That is not going to work. And then there is another system of yoga called Raja Yoga. Very popular in India. They claim to be the daughters of Lord Brahma. And Krishna in the Gita says, Pitaham asya jagato, I am the father of everyone. And they concentrate on some kind of light somewhere, focus on that. And that's their method of self-realization. Then there is the most popular Karma Yoga. Everyone claims to be a Karma Yogi. You do your job, earn your money, enjoy sense gratification. And he defines himself as a karma. He claims to be a karma yogi. You do your karma. Who defines their karma? They themselves. You define your karma and duty, and then you follow whatever you want, and then you claim to be a karma yogi. That's not it. It's going to work. You have to follow the karma that is defined by the Supreme Lord. You can't join a company and define your own responsibility and then do whatever you want and then demand a salary check. It doesn't work like that. You join a company and your boss or your superiors define your roles and responsibilities, right? And then you have to follow that. And if you follow that properly, then you become a proper employee of this company. You can't join a company and define your own roles and objectives. Similarly, if you want to be known as a karma yogi, then we have to follow the karma that is prescribed to us by some superior authority. We can't define our own karma. We can't define our own way of working and we can't our own duties. It has to be directed by someone superior. Then we can say that karmanye vadhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. You can do whatever is your responsibility and then give up the results of your work. That is a real karma yogi. Not the one who has his self-created duties and then calling himself a karma yogi. It doesn't work like that. And finally, there is bhakti yogi that Prabhupada is trying to point out in this purport. Bhakti yogi means one who is performing the yoga of devotion. one who is connected to the Lord through devotional service, which Prabhupada translates it as Krishna consciousness, another term of devotional service. So in this method, you do the activities and offer all the results with love and devotion to Krishna. You do as per the directions of Krishna. You act according to the directions of the scriptures and offer all those results to Krishna with love and devotion. And the core activities of Bhakti Yoga are hearing and chanting. Hearing the glories of the Lord, hearing and chanting His holy names, and deity worship, reading scriptures. All these activities form the heart of Bhakti Yoga. And then there are corollary activities of so many other things. Even whatever occupational duties you have, you can dovetail it as Bhakti Yoga. So Krishna says in the Gita that yoginam api sarvesham, the topmost yogi. Now we have so many classes of yogis. Who among all is the best? Which one is the topmost? So Krishna says yoginam api sarvesham mad gate nantaratmana. Among all the yogis, one who is always residing in me, Shraddhavan bhajate yomam, one who worships me with faith and devotion, same yukta tamo mata, that yogi is yukta tama, the topmost of all yogis. So all we need to do is just follow Krishna's instructions and offer all the results back to Him with love and devotion. And there we are, the topmost yogi. We need not do any complicated yogic procedures, yogic asanas and those complicated asanas. We just need to chant His holy names, hear about Him, speak about Him, and offer all our results, the results of all our activities, back to Him with love and devotion. Then we are situated in proper Bhakti Yoga. And that is what we mean by situating ourselves in actual self-realization. Because the goal of all processes of self-realization is to situate ourselves as the servant of God. That is the real goal of all self-realization processes. Bhakti Yoga means you directly acknowledge that fact and carry out your activities based on that fact. You act as a servant of Krishna. You act by following His instructions. And you act by simply carrying out His orders. That means you are acting as a servant of the Lord. You are His order carrier. So whether we acknowledge that, whether we accept that fact or not, simply by following that instruction, we are situated in our proper position in self-realization. And when we are situated in that, then we can see things clearly, as it is mentioned here. Nainam pasyante chetasa. Otherwise, we cannot. Only those who are situated in that position can see. The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. So a devotee may be externally illiterate, having no high qualification, educational qualification or academic qualification. But still, if he is simply situated in Bhakti Yoga, following the orders of Krishna as mentioned in the scriptures, he can see things clearly, everything in its right perspective. Otherwise, one may have all kinds of degrees and certificates and all other academic qualifications. But if he is not a devotee of Krishna, then he cannot see things clearly. He remains in ignorance. That is the purport of this verse. So all we need to do is just become a devotee of Krishna and situate ourselves in Bhakti Yoga. So I'll stop here. If anyone has any question, we can take one or two. Or we'll have Kirtan. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.